And that brings up compassion. Thanks for reminding us of that.
Well, I'm relieved that I'm not avoiding inner work.
Right. Yeah, it's the inner work on triggers that we've been interested in and trying to pull together. And that's what you're seeing in the book.
Hey, I got a hand from John Draper.
Oh, okay. And then Catherine had a question also.
Okay, John.
Go ahead, John. Is he unmuted?
He is.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Cool. So, hey, so the biggest thing that I got out of our group this morning is there's something particularly calming about finding out that, you know, it's amazing how much we all share similar triggers. You know, we all feel like we're not being heard enough. We all feel like we're being judged too much for a variety of reasons. But what I wanted to add, Dave, I don't know whether or not we're going to be able to get to chapter 8, but my God, your little phrase that you have on your desk that says, always choose gentle love. I don't know what it is about those four words, but I think modifying the love with gentle, which kind of takes it out of the dramatic and the spectacular, it's amazing how that little mantra has been a big blessing, if you will, over the last several days. It's an easily remembered phrase, and it's easy to remember that when I'm trying to find that nanosecond of mindful pause before I go over the waterfall.
A very good point. And as I say in the book, and he's referring to a little phrase that I got from the novel The Brothers Karamazov, in which the old wise priest, in answer to the question, what should I do when, you know, people hate or hurt me, says, always choose gentle love. I put that as a note, you know, right here on my desk. And as I say in the book, I will need that note for the rest of my life. It will take that long to make that response automatic. I will have to work on it and work on it and work on it, because that little Italian boy from New Haven, Connecticut is still using the old retaliatory response if I allow it. And so this is a shocking alternative. And that's what we're looking for in our spirituality. We're looking for the alternative, the reversal of the old style of triggering others. We're going to the style that Christiane brought up, which is enough compassion so that we're even careful about not triggering others, and we're adjusting the controls on how we might hurt back when others trigger us. Catherine, did you have a comment? Yeah, do you want to unmute Catherine Dean?
She's unmuted. There she goes.
Thank you. In our group, Pat and Gail mentioned a book called The Four Agreements by Ruiz. And these are the four agreements. Don't take things personally. Don't make assumptions. Always do your best. And be impeccable with your words, which is a very
hard one.
That's a hard one.
Yeah, it's a good reminder. I like that. Awesome. Okay, other comments or questions?
Yeah, we've got a couple of hands up.
Go ahead.
Jody again. So here's Jody.
Okay.
Hi, David.
Hi.
A little bit back from my question, but we talked a bit in our group about it, and a part of it is when people misunderstand me. I think that's one of my triggers, and that's kind of what I was getting at when people say, you made me, or, you know, you made me mad, or you did this or that. And I think one of my triggers is that then I try to explain myself, and I may really push for that. So I'm curious, and I know I didn't quite get to it, but I'm kind of curious, like, how do you handle that? In our group, we kind of came up with me becoming more curious about what they might be saying, but also, because some of it could, you know, could be true, but also just really how to handle a communication style with that then and in the future, because these are people that are going to be in my life. Therefore, setting up that boundary you talked about. I'm not quite sure how to
Kind of asking others, help me know how I can things so that there's a mutual understanding.
Help me know what, did you say?
Help me know how to put things so that you could get it. As opposed to, why can't you get it? What's wrong with you? You go instead to, we all have different ways of understanding, so help me know what works for you. It also puts the ball back into their court in a nice way.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Sure. Thank you. Was there one other?
Yeah, John's got his hand up again.
So. Okay. Hi, John.
So recently I got very upset because my partner, my significant other, was saying things and I felt criticized. And so what I was very busy doing was developing anger and trying to get even to stop her from criticizing me. And then I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I suddenly realized that what was really happening was I was criticizing her behavior. And that was not a good thing. And I realized that all she was doing was shaking a few molecules of air between me and her when she spoke. And it was those molecules of air hitting my eardrums that set off my brain to see it as being criticism. And I don't like feeling criticized. So I was most probably impossible for me to change her behavior. So the option was for me to change my behavior. So I'm working on not feeling criticized when she says things. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, John. I think we can all relate to it. And certainly being criticized is a universal trigger. Gee, I love getting feedback, but when it comes across as criticism, it's really going to be hard to let it in. I know you want me to, you know, I know you're trying to get something across. Maybe it'll work better if it comes across as feedback. That's how you would sound when you're trying to work something out with someone who criticizes you. And many of us were criticized in childhood. And that's coming up again when someone criticizes us now. You're never in a room with just one person. There are four other people in the room with you. Your parents and the other person's parents who did God knows what that went deep into the cells of your body and get activated, triggered when somebody says something that is reminiscent of what you heard originally or what you felt about what they said or did. Okay, are there any other questions?
Yeah, we got three more hands up, so we'll just keep going.
Go ahead.
Okay, Jean or Jeannie?
Mm-hmm. I have to unmute myself, I think.
Oh,
I'm okay. Yeah, I just wanted to add to that, Catherine and Alice McDonald were in my group, and we brought up the four agreements as well. And the addendum to Don't Take Anything Personally in that book is, that helps me very much, is that everyone's in their own dream. When I realized that, don't take it personally, everyone is completely in their own dream, that really helps me. Out of an Italian opera. David, can you relate to this? So
yeah.
It was super dramatic. And if you want to get a word in edgewise, you just have to kind of speak above, you know, the other person. But if you realize, for me to just realize that everyone's in their own dream, that really helps me to just not be confrontational and not be so direct, but to just understand their comment has nothing to do with you.
And you know, we are sensitive beings, so it is normal to take some things personally, but not in such a way that you wind up getting destabilized or becoming aggressive toward the other. That's the difference. It's not that nothing will ever be personal. That would be impossible for beings like us who have such sensitive pores, P-O-R-E-S. And so what people say or do does affect us. We don't want to let that go. We want to be vulnerable. But at the same time, we're going to balance the vulnerability with our boundaries. And so we're not going to let things go so far in that they turn us into someone who hurts back. And also not go so far in that we ourselves fall apart. That's the distinction I would make. Okay, was somebody else?
Yep, Catherine.
Myself. Okay, I have it's this kind of a double-edged sword, Dave, that I wanted to bring up. One is being a smart woman who's very direct and expresses opinions. And I think this came up earlier in our class too. Not in a way, not to override people, but just if you're asked for an opinion or your thought, you share it, which can, in my experience in certain, especially in committees and things like that, can be looked upon as not favorably by perhaps a male or a female in a group who may not feel that same ability to speak up or whatever. So the double-edged sword of that is, so that's one thing. I kind of feel like because I'm a big personality that I kind of attract attention and may be more of a projection screen availability because of that, you know, seen as, well, she can take it. And so what I do is background work to say, did I say offensive, to just see that I'm not really coming across in whatever way that I'm not trying to be obtrusive, but I am. But the other side of that is then, they want you to go in and seemingly repair and be the woman who is going to be compassionate and say, apologetic. The other side of the coin, you get kind of smacked for being more that way, more forthright, and then you don't come back and do some sort of repair for an insecurity that obviously is probably childhood related. And so, and if you're in a committee or you're doing something like that, you kind of have to stay there. You can't just sort of leave the field and say whatever. I don't know. Do you have any wisdom? Because I think for females, I'm not isolated in that experience necessarily.
It sounds like the subtext that you're getting is, how dare you have power? And, you know, we were brought up, as you know, to believe that, you know, the power is in the males, the patriarchy. And when women show just forthrightness, which I like that word that you used, which is the healthy expression of your own power, it'll come across as aggressive, pushy, etc. And it isn't really. And you just have to keep, and it sounds like you can do this, you, Catherine. You just have to speak up gently and remind everybody that, you know, it's okay to have, to talk in this forthright way. Mm-hmm. But you certainly can't convince others necessarily.
Right. And then you don't fall into the traditional repair, like, I'm not going straight into repair work. Yeah. And so what would you suggest for that? I mean, basically, I just sort of go, okay, I'm going to keep my head down and get through this task. Get the heck out of here. But but I'm just wondering.
Just make sure you get your point across.
Yeah. Oh, it always comes across. I just, you know, you feel like you've wounded someone because, and it's insecurity in them. And I know I can't fix or, so anyway, just how to set that boundary in a group situation. So, all right. Thank you. I'll keep working at it. I mean, fortunately, I don't think the other person's aware how really. So, it's okay.
Yeah. You would have more sensitivity about it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Somebody else have a comment?
Kate's got her hand up. I think this is probably going to be the last one. Then we need to go to your closing remarks and some announcements.
Okay.
So here's Kate unmuted. Kate, if you just unmute yourself, you should be good to go.
So I've been thinking. Hi, Dave. I've been thinking a lot about what you were saying earlier about criticism versus feedback. And I was wondering if you could elucidate a little bit about the difference between criticism and feedback, and how to administer feedback gracefully, especially in service of boundaries.
I thought of that when I made the distinction. I thought maybe I should say a little more about it. So thank you for bringing it up. Is information that helps you do better at what you're doing. And criticism is a put down for what you're doing. So I welcome feedback. I love it when you help me know how I can be more appreciative of you. But when you turn on me and say, oh, you just never appreciate anybody but yourself. Now you're criticizing, making me wrong, bad, censoring me, and that shuts off the openness for the real statements, which is, I'm hurt that you don't appreciate me. That's what they're really saying. And then give me the feedback that helps me know how to appreciate you. Well, for instance, when I put so much time into setting up the party, you could have said, you know, you're putting a lot of time into this and I don't have to, and I really appreciate that you're doing this. Thank you. But many of us have heard so much criticism and so little feedback, we just no longer see the distinction, unfortunately. Well,
Can you talk a little? Can you say? I don't know. I'm trying to unpack this. Where criticism comes from? Like, I think feedback comes from, you know, kindness and wanting and encouragement and compassion. But I think, like, understanding where do you see what I'm saying? Like, I think criticism comes from, like, either, like, need for control or do you see that?
It comes from two places. First, the judgmental mind that has decided this is the right way to do things and you're doing it the wrong way. And I'm the one who has decided what the criteria are for how things are supposed to be done. So that's one way. But then at a deeper level, criticism comes from, I'm hurt that you're not doing things the way I need them to be done. This bothers me. This makes me seem unimportant. So sometimes that's where the criticism comes from. And that's where we go to what Christiane brought up about compassion. Oh, I guess I'm missing out on your needs in this, so let me respond that way. That would be the alternative to, well, let's see if we can have feedback instead of criticism.
So would you say that's an ego?
Yeah, it's where the ego gets into the picture. And as soon as the ego gets in, the trigger finger is fast at work.
Got it. That's super helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to end with a poem, but first we have some other announcements. We talked about relationships and spirituality. We did our combination. And I'm so glad you got a chance to read the book. And just keep in mind that in the appendix, I have my affirmations to free you from fear. So they start on 175. And just doing these each day, and you can just do the ones that fit for you, or you can read them all. And if you can put them on your device in your own voice, that really helps. If you want it in my voice, as I said last time, it's on my website, daverico.com, under free articles. Okay.
Why don't you go ahead and do your poem, and then we'll talk about the future.
Well, first I wanted to mention about, you know, for next May, what we'll be doing. Can we just do that first?
Sure. Tell us what's going to happen next May.
Tim, do you want to show the cover of my book?
Yep, I'll pull it up right now.
So this is the new one. It's from Orbis Press, and it's on Amazon now. And it came out in April. And instead of just concentrating on how we integrate psychology and spirituality, I have added something else, which is sanctity. So it's sanity, spirituality, and sanctity.
Saintly.
And saying that to be fully human with all the bells and whistles that a human can have, we not only have a spirituality, but we have saintliness. And I don't mean canonized saints and statues and all that. I mean that there are times in life when we do something especially loving or especially generous or especially heroic, and I explain all that in this book, and this will be our topic for next time, and I'm really looking forward to it because I put a lot of time into it, and I try to show you, well, what would it mean to be psychologically healthy, that sane. What would it mean to have a spiritual consciousness? That's mostly loving kindness and letting go of ego, and what would it take to fulfill our highest human destiny, which is to become saints. What is a saint? One who really walks the talk, one who at times is heroic, not every minute, but enough of the time you can show the full level of human unconditional love, and it really spirals out and helps others. So I'm really happy about the book, and I'm really, I really wanted to share it. And I hope that you'll be able to join us next May. So that's what I'm offering next May, if the group wants to do it.
Great.
And I would like to end with a poem that I have in the book, and I think it's self-explanatory. I call the poem, "What I Want My Last Word to Be," especially now that I'm getting closer and closer to whatever my last word is going to be. "I want my last word to be your name, Mary. I shall be all lost in your smiling face as I peer into your welcoming eyes. I shall be transfixed by your ever-opening heart, as always and now, so close. I will call you Mother, while you hold me in the arms that were waiting for me all the decades of my life. My own mother will be standing beside us, nodding her head in bliss and waiting her turn."
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Dave. That was a beautiful poem and a beautiful way to end. And I was thinking that's a beautiful way to fall asleep at night. I had that image. Thanks for everything. Thanks for the whole session. It was absolutely wonderful. And thank you all for participating in our first Word in Life May season on Zoom. We have made history. We did it. Now let me tell you what the Word in Life Steering Committee, and I see that the Word in Life Steering Committee is in the house. So if you would raise your hand and wave, you're in the gallery now. We've got Tom Heck is here. Wave, Tom. He's our webmaster. Ann Heck is his wife. Joe Schneider, give us a wave. He's the treasurer. Michael Dean is here next to Catherine. And Martha Siegel is here. And also Pat McClure. Give us a wave. Those are all the steering committee members. We've been hard at work trying to figure out what to do for fall. And this is what we came up with. Since it does not look like there will be a vaccine ready in September, we've decided to plan on a Zoom platform. The season will begin September 10th, 2020, and continues for the following 10 Thursdays, finishing on November 12th of 2020. And we are very much hoping that Dr. Tim Burnett will be the Zoom master again for us in the fall. Now, this is what we came up with. Since we are heading for pre-election weeks, Word in Life invites you to navigate the political currents with our hearts and souls, as well as our thinking minds. The tentative title is Engaging the Heart of Democracy. We will again make history by not choosing a study book. Rather, explore the teachings of two powerful books, The first is Healing the Heart of Democracy by Parker Palmer, a Quaker activist. You probably know of that book, but it's good to look at it again at this time. And the other book we're going to consider is Love Your Enemies by Arthur C. Brooks. He's a conservative, former head of one of America's top policy think tanks. Now, I wonder, Pat McClure is in the house. Pat, would you like to say a few more words about what we've got planned? Pat, is Pat, can you, she can unmute
Pat, you're unmuted. There you go.
Am I unmuted now?
Yeah, you got it.
I didn't tap hard enough. First, I'd like to say thanks to Dave, of course, for the usual superb month of May that we get to spend with you. But I did not realize, of course, until you were well launched into your own work and we were beginning to think about this fall, what a superb foundation this your work with Triggers gives us for looking at what we'd like to do this fall. We are envisioning a kind of spiritual social lab time as we follow the work of these two spiritual pioneers, Parker Palmer and Arthur Brooks. We'd like to study and actually try out Parker Palmer's Five Habits of the Heart in a small group format. There's so much to learn and to make use of right now. And the other thing we'd like to follow is Arthur Brooks' work in dismantling the culture of contempt in which we find ourselves. His advice is to learn how to disagree better, because out of disagreement ultimately comes the very best result. But to disagree in this deeply humanitarian way, where our attitudes allow us to disagree intelligently but with full respect, where we call out the humanity of the person we're talking with as well as with ourselves. It should be a rich 10 weeks, and I think it may give all of us a really different platform to stand on as we think our way and act our way through the politics of 2020's election year.
Thanks so much, Pat. We love your passion. Thank you. And we want to go on here and say that Dr. Rico and both Dr. Rico and Dr. Burnett were so intrigued when we told them about this study focus that they both indicated that they would like to participate. So we have two of the first 10 weeks booked with powerful speakers. We don't know which week they will take, but they will be two of the 10 speakers. The committee is meeting on June 10th to make further plans regarding speakers and fees and weekly format, and all that. It's a work in progress, but it is taking shape. Now, because of the Zoom platform, we've been able to reach folks from far and wide, all different states, four or five different states. We hope that you will stay connected and invite your friends and neighbors and relatives or anyone else who may be interested in our study focus. We have your emails, so you will be included in the upcoming information. We may again make history by offering online payment method. Our treasurer, Joe, is investigating that option as a choice. That would be very convenient for those, especially that in the faraway states. So that's the information that I have about what's coming up in the fall, and we hope that you'll join us again. We thank Dave again. And we thank Tim again for all their... This couldn't have been gone more smoothly. It was really a wonderful adventure into the Zoom platform. And we have to give ourselves a hand. We did it. We did it. All right.
And thank you, Judith, for all the work you put into it.
You're welcome. It was worth it.
And all the committee.
Yeah, we've made a lot of new friends this time, all over the United States. So come back and join us.